The following is an encore presentation of Happy Hour with Mike and Vince.
I wonder if people are tired of recorded shows yet. This one is practically live. What is today anyway? The 13th of June in 2019? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Happy Hour. Just the Happy Hour. And I'm Vince Heiser. Mike is having too much fun fishing at the beach, I guess. And I'm too modest to do a monologue. Yes, I hear laughter. Anyway, we have two. We have a great show today, I think. It's not going to be boring, Jennifer. And we have two guests, so it won't be me trying to do a monologue. You're glad to hear. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, we had a guest talking about Amazon, Facebook, Matt Stoller of the Open Markets Institute. And we didn't really finish our discussion. It was, you know, my point was whether some guy with a few computers should be treated as a monopoly just because his last name happens to be Zuckerberg. We'll finish that discussion in the second half. Right now, I want to tell you about a brand new book. This is a review copy. It's not even out yet. But this is a tremendous book, and I haven't been able to put it down. Our guest, let's see, 135 pages. The author's name is Myron Magnet, and Mr. Magnet is a prize winning author. He's got some credentials, editor at large of City Journal, and author of this new book that I just love, Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution. Mr. Magnet was on the board of editors of Fortune magazine. He's been in media before, so he's going to make this interview really interesting, I'm sure. And he's written commentary for the Wall Street Journal, National Review, American Spectator, New York Times. He's out there. Mr. Magnet, thank you for giving us some of your obviously valuable time.
It's such a pleasure to be with you.
and degrees from Columbia and the University of Cambridge. Isn't that nice?
Well, it was fun anyway.
All right. Well, one of my heroes on the court is Clarence Thomas. This is Catholic radio, so we're obviously interested in the religious backgrounds of people. Thomas is a convert to Catholicism and found his way into scholasticism, Thomism, Aristotle, and all that kind of stuff, and has written some things on that are really insightful. So I'm dying to hear more here. So how did you come to do this? You're not a lawyer, right?
No. I'm a journalist, and what I do is when suddenly I'm curious about something, I decide to write a book about it, and that's how I find out. So what this came out of the last book I wrote. I'm a conservative, and I've been hearing all my professional career about the Founding Fathers and the Constitution, and suddenly I thought, oh, wait a minute, you know, what I know is what I know from high school and the biographies I've read as an adult, but let's really get down to it and find out what kind of republic they envisioned and what kind of government they intended to frame by the Constitution that they wrote. And I came away just kind of flabbergasted by the grandeur of the government. This is a constitution that was designed for a people that were not going to be ruled. It was going to be a self-governing republic in which the role of government was to protect the individual American's right to pursue his own happiness in his own way, in his family, in his local community. So, okay, I answered those questions, but that left me with a whole new set that needed to be answered, and those were, well, we don't have that government anymore, so how do we lose it, and how do we get it back? And that's what led me to Justice Thomas. In his hundreds of opinions over now almost 30 years on the court, he has laid out in the really the most readable way a kind of comprehensive history of the subversion of the original Constitution, by which I mean the Constitution framed in 1787 at the convention, improved by the Bill of Rights, perfected by the Reconstruction Amendments after the Civil War that gave blacks full rights of American citizens, and by the 19th Amendment that gave women the vote. So he's really laid forth a history of how this got dissolved over more than 100 years. And he's also, and this is where he's one of my heroes, he's laid out a blueprint for how to restore it. And I think what he would say is that there is nothing, 232 years after the Constitutional Convention, there is nothing more up-to-date and cutting-edge than a Constitution of Liberty. And, you know, one of the things I argue in the book is that our politics have become so angry and bitter because we're in the midst of a crisis of legitimacy, really. There are two separate and opposing views of where the authority of our government comes from. And my side, and I mean especially Justice Thomas's side, but we can call this the Freedom Party, believes that it comes from the original Constitution with its guarantee of freedom and its expectation of self-reliance. On the other side, you got the Fairness Party that believes in what Woodrow Wilson called the living Constitution, which, you know, is now the catchphrase for it. And that's one where we don't have all that checks and balances and limitation of the original Constitution. Here we have the Supreme Court making up law as it goes along, and this army of expert administrators trained at the Ivy League colleges. Remember, Woodrow Wilson, who coined this phrase, was our first professor president, who believed that he and his young experts knew which way the arc of history bent better than your average American voter. So these experts in administrative agencies were going to be making rules for us like a legislature and carrying them out like an executive and adjudicating and punishing infractions of them like a judiciary. No separation of powers, no basis in the Constitution whatsoever, and presiding over the immense expansion of the powers of the federal government, which Clarence Thomas looks at and says, hang on, this is not what our framers envisioned. This is not what we're supposed to have. I want to turn this back. And to the extent that this subversion of the original Constitution was either presided over or blessed by the Supreme Court, he says, since we justices don't hesitate when we see laws passed by the Congress and signed by the President, but we think that they are unconstitutional, we don't hesitate to overturn them. So we should do the same thing with the opinions of our predecessors. If we think that they were wrong, and we have to keep re-examining, when we think they're wrong, we have to overturn and say, no, this is not what the Constitution says, because the ultimate authority on which our government rests is the Constitution. He says, if we wanted a Constitution that evolves by judicial decree, we could have stuck with the one that had governed the colonists for 150 years before the 1787 convention. That's the unwritten British one that exactly proceeds by the accretion of judicial rulings, but ended up in this country with taxation without representation, and we junked it.
And, yeah, okay.
Okay, now you'd ask the question about Justice Thomas's Catholicism, and I think, you know, I'm happy to have a chance to talk to you on Catholic radio because it's a really important topic, and the church did so much for Justice Thomas in so many ways. And one is, you mentioned that he's a convert to Catholicism. Well, sort of. You know his story. He was born in a kerosene lit shack in a Georgia swamp, and as a little boy, his mother moved to Savannah and worked as a maid, and she couldn't make enough money to keep him and his little brother. So she turned them over to her father and stepmother, who lived a few blocks away around the corner, but it was like a different world. And her father was this completely self-made man, semi-literate, but self-made. And one of the ways in which he had made himself was to convert from the Southern Baptist church he was born in to Catholicism, because he wanted a structured religion. And so, of course, he then had his grandsons convert, too, and he sent them to Catholic school and segregated, like everything in Savannah. But what the nuns, and the nuns were mostly Irish immigrants in this school, and what the nuns taught, even in this segregated school in Savannah, is that all men are created equal, and that segregation was wrong, and that all men have the same, are endowed by the same rights by the Creator as all other men. And this was an immensely important lesson that Justice Thomas learned from his, almost from his earliest years, and held on to for a long, long time. So even when he grew up under the oppression of segregation, he always held on to, he always knew that it was morally wrong, and it was morally wrong because God had given every man the same rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that Jefferson talked about in the Declaration of Independence. And the other thing, I think another thing that Justice Thomas's Catholicism did for him is that he was perfectly comfortable with the idea of moral absolutes. That is, you know, you can say, well, wait a minute, if you don't believe in a supreme being, you know, if you don't believe in the creator of mankind, to use Jefferson's phrase, well, where do these rights come from? And they can get a little slippery, as they did with Woodrow Wilson, who said, you know, a lot of nonsense is talked about inalienable rights, and it's just sentimentality. You know, when you try to say, what is this, it's very hard to put your finger on it. Clarence Thomas never had a problem with this. He never did. Now, as you know, he was going to be a priest, and he was in a seminary in St. Louis until he heard one of his class, and he was one of, I think, a couple of black kids in this seminary. And when Martin Luther King was shot, he heard one of his classmates say, "Good, I hope the son of a bitch dies." And yes, he said, that was it for my vocation. He said, to hear somebody studying for the priesthood wish ill on a man of God in this racist way, that was it for me. Well, as he says, he found a new calling because he was very comfortable with the idea of a calling. And he says, this being a Supreme Court justice and restoring the original Constitution, he says, that's my calling. And just last week, you know, there's been all this talk about is Justice Thomas going to retire? He said, come on. He said, you know, I'm hitting my stride here. This is my calling. I am not abandoning it. And, of course, this is just at the moment when Justice Thomas's view of the world, which for so long was considered by, especially by the liberal law professors, to be way out there in right field and kind of loony, he's winning. This idea that we have an original constitution that guarantees us liberty and keeps the government to limit so that the government can't oppress us, This is beginning to win the day, and only, can't remember if it was just a week ago today or maybe it was 8 or 9 days ago, but Justice Thomas has so often written either dissents or mm-hmm. concurrences with the court's reasoning, but the court's judgment, but not its reasoning, because he rejects a precedent that the court is resting on. Just the other day, he wrote the majority opinion for the court in a case that is too technical to be interesting, but the interesting thing about it is that it all turns on overturning one of the Supreme Court's precedents. And Justice Thomas wrote this decision in which the majority of his colleagues went along with him, overturning a Supreme Court precedent. So all this stuff that you hear in judicial confirmation hearings about, do you respect settled law? Of course, what they're talking about is, do you respect Roe v. Wade? Justice Thomas right. would say, I respect settled law when it is respectable, but when it is just made up by some court out of emanations and penumbras, to use Justice Brennan's ridiculous phrase for gas and shadows emitted by the Constitution, right? This is what the abortion decision finally rests on. He says, when they're not respectable, I don't respect them. And you know what really sets him going on this? Mm-mm. We fought a civil war. Nearly 400,000 Union soldiers died to make men free. We then passed these amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, and especially the 14th Amendment is designed to cloak freed slaves in all of the rights guaranteed by the Bill of Rights against the states, so the states can't deprive them of life, liberty, or property without due process of law and all that sort of thing. And two 1870 Supreme Court decisions in 73 and 76 say, oh, wait, that's not what the 14th Amendment says at all. No, these are not the rights that the 14th Amendment is talking about. These are not rights given by the Constitution's amendments. No, these are the rights that are involved here are just things like being protected by the government when you travel on the high seas, or the right not to be subject to bills of attainder. And Clarence Thomas says, what are they talking about here? These are infamous, horrible decisions. You know, why are we giving them any respect? We're perfectly happy to overturn laws if we think they're unconstitutional. These decisions are just plain unconstitutional. And we should be overturning them. We should not be respecting them more than 100 years later. And once he gets started on this, then he's perfectly happy to say, you know, and we can overturn laws that we can overturn Supreme Court decisions that allowed Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal to expand the power of the state to control all economic activity. He says, you know, if we go on in this way, we're going to be regulating potluck, where the federal government is going to be regulating potluck suppers. we can't do this, and we can't have the Supreme Court allowing the growth of an administrative state where bureaucrats make laws for us. This has no comfortable home in our constitutional structure. And in 2015, he started issuing this series of opinions, just, you know, first questioning the legitimacy of the administrative state, period, and then chipping away at its supposed constitutional foundations and as for making up laws out of whole cloth, like, you know, Woodrow Wilson wanted the court to do, sitting as a permanent constitutional convention, he has no truck with that whatsoever. And he says, I mean, just last year, he had a case in which a career armed robber was claiming that the police use of cell phone location data invaded his Fourth Amendment protection mm-hmm. against unreasonable search and seizure. And Thomas, and this is a good example of his originalism, Thomas says, wait a minute, the Fourth Amendment protects you against unreasonable search and seizure of your persons, home, papers, and effects. He said, cell phone location data is not papers. Furthermore, it's not yours. It belongs to the phone company. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with the police getting a subpoena and getting this data from the phone company. Mm-hmm. And the plaintiff here, the robber, is resting on a Supreme Court precedent. This is, well, wait a minute. This is a Warren Court precedent. He's saying, wait a minute. What the Fourth Amendment really protects is our reasonable expectation of privacy. And Justice Thomas says, come on, just read the words of the Fourth Amendment. There's nothing about privacy here. And as for a reasonable expectation, who's to decide what is reasonable? That's for a legislature to decide, not justices. And there's not one single mention of privacy in the Constitution or its amendments whatsoever. So this is just another wholly made-up, judge-made rule which we should junk. And that's what he said in one of his decisions, one of his opinions last year. So he's laid out this roadmap for restoring the Constitution of Liberty. Here's a fact that is important to dwell on. He and his wife treat his clerks like their family, like they're their own children. You know, he mentors them, he stays in touch with them for their whole career, and he's had a lot of clerks now in almost 30 years on the court. Well, 20% of the judges whom the Trump administration has elevated to the federal bench are former Clarence Thomas clerks. So not only has he laid out a roadmap for how to restore the framers' Constitution of Liberty, but he's got the troops in place to carry out this counter-revolution when the time comes. And, you know, there was a time just a few years ago when conservative law professors and critics of the court were in such despair over the way things were going that they were saying, oh, well, Article 5 of the Constitution gives us an opportunity to call a constitutional convention, and that's kind of the Hail Mary pass that we conservatives ought to throw. Let's call a new constitutional convention and get rid of these ridiculous accretions that have been laid on the framers' constitution from the 1870s forward. And we don't have to do that anymore. We got Clarence Thomas laying out his roadmap, and now we've got Gorsuch, we've got Kavanaugh, and we got all these young judges out there in the wings waiting for their turn. I think that just as a week ago, the Supreme Court, you know, quite readily overturned a silly precedent, I think we can count on them to be overturning a lot of silly precedents in years to come, and I think the result will be that we will come closer and closer to our original Constitution of Liberty, and that 100 years from now, people will be looking back at Justice Clarence Thomas, as I argue in Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution, as the most consequential jurist of his era.
Wow. You know, we've had Hadley Arkus, and I'm sure you know who Hadley Arkus
sure,
is.
Sure, of course I know.
Anthony
him, yeah.
Esselin. You have just earned the Happy Hour Honorary Law Degree.
And I'm proud to say I'm not a lawyer.
That's right. Well, I am. And I am very impressed with your work and your skills in talking and
Thank
in writing.
You. Thank you.
And I will tell you that this is a book that a conservative can't do without, especially a Catholic conservative.
That's for sure. That's really for sure.
So we are talking. Go ahead.
I'm happy to tell you the book seems to be doing fine on Amazon.
Okay, well, in the next segment, we're going to talk about Amazon, and not in a good way, probably. But nevertheless, we're glad you're selling books. Now, we are talking with Myron Magnet, the author of Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution, And this book is from Encounter Books. Is this something people can get at encounterbooks.com? Is that a place to go?
And could get at any online bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, the bookstore of your choice. You know, it's everywhere. They printed plenty of copies out there, and they're selling them. And it's out now. It's out.
It's not an over your head book. You've done a great job presenting this information.
Oh, thank you. Well, like I say, I'm a journalist, right? I'm writing to ordinary guys like me, and I never wanted to write it to lawyers and law professors. I wanted to write it to concerned citizens whose constitution it is.
Yeah, except that you make me want to go look up. There's something on every other page that I need to go look up. So it's very impressive. But we're definitely putting you in the conservative expert circle here. So
thank you so much. Very
delightful interview again, Myron Magnet. Do you have a blog or website you want to promote?
My website is myronmagnet.com. You can find pretty much information about everything I've written there.
Okay, super. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time today.
Pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for your hospitality.
All right, well, I tell you, this is amazing stuff we come across. And I at first thought, Clarence Thomas must be really proud of himself that he's achieved so much. And then after reading into this book some, well, wait a minute, he must be really frustrated because he's surrounded by these anti-intellectual justices. How does he make any headway? But now after talking to Mr. Magnet, it's a hopeful thing. We're moving in the right direction. I can tell you we found somebody sent a sign of moving in the right direction. Speaking of signs here, you know, there used to be in the national parks, which park was this? I forget where this was, but signs that say the small alpine glaciers present today started forming 7,000 years ago, reached their maximum size in 1850. Now, they are now rapidly shrinking due to human-caused climate change. Computer models indicate that the glaciers will all be gone by the year 2020. Well, guess what? The Park Service has quietly begun taking those signs down. Oops. Anyway, so, you know, good reason for hope. Stay with us after the break. We're going to talk to Matt Stoller. He was on a few weeks back talking about the monopoly problem with Amazon and Facebook and so on. And we got into that with the viewpoint of consumers, but we didn't let him explain the viewpoint of businessmen. So stick with me here and we'll wade through the one of the important constitutional issues of the day, this monopoly stuff. Be right back. I'm Vince Heiser.